You were listening to episode 280 of the Game Deflators podcast. My name's John, and here on the Game Deflators podcast, we like to talk about games we recently picked up, games we're currently playing, and this week I'm joined by Charles de Maussant of Silver Phoenix Entertainment.
Yes, this is amazing. How have you been, oh brilliant John, the former anime god of conventions, and now more fascinating because of what you do traveling the world and being an amazing host with podcast. Talk about that. 280 is so greaty. We dance all around and don't have a frown. Games we'll play, we must say, and then I can't think of any more rhymes.
I don't even know how the hell you did that off the top of your head.
Yeah, I know. I'm just being, that's the advantage of having my brain on that. So,
well,
you know, we could pretend this is radio, and we'll be like, radio, one ear goes in one ear and stays.
That's about how it is on here, I think. Yes. Well, thanks for hopping on. Yeah. So for people that
I have a pogo stick, that's how I'm hopping on.
This is going to be a long-ass episode.
Yeah, it's only 45 minutes, and you're like, why did I do this?
Well, so the funny thing is that, so I've known Charles, and we'll go into who Charles is in a moment, but I've known Charles for
10 years.
Like, I think it's, is it beyond 10 years?
10 years.
I think it's beyond now.
Because when I first worked with my former business partner, Mr. Barnhart, we excitedly did one of your early conventions in Florida, and it was a great experience, and I finally got a green marble.
I remember that. Yes, that was actually interesting. I think it's more like 12 years. Are you sure it's 10? I want to say
yeah, because I started working with Barnhart on 2013.
Okay, that makes sense. So. That makes sense. So a little over 10 years now. Yeah. But either way, Charles, if you want to go into who you are and what is Silver Phoenix Entertainment, and then we'll get into our standard part of the episode here prior to doing a general interview on what's happening.
It's standard like oil. That's what it is. Okay, well, my name is Charles de Maussant, as you know. And what's kind of neat is we actually have an airport named after us, but it got renamed into New Orleans International Airport. But if you research John Maussant, John Beavis Maussant, and even Matilda Maussant, you could discover that we were early aviators of last century, like the 19th century. Just fascinating stuff. We even have a book written about our family, The Magnificent Maussants, not to be confused with The Magnificent Mile, which is in Chicago. I published comic books, and then I thought, hey, wait, this is a band, darn it. And I keep buying games. Why don't I design games? And I realized, wow, I have a gift for it. And I've had other people come up like, well, you're really good with graphics, Charles. But yeah, I got these mechanics. Okay, so started designing games and different projects with people. So it's been a fun evolution. So now I do board games. I'm designing tarot cards with friends. They're doing the designing. I'm helping it to get to print. Other fun stuff. And I've even done government-funded comic books. So thank you for paying your taxes, everyone who's listening.
And your first comic, you had me pull it up here, called Kremlin, was in 1991, it looks like.
Kremlin, no L.
Kremlin, yeah. Kremlin. Okay, yeah, I know. We had this whole discussion just before. Yes, I'm still going to call it Kremlin just to piss you off at this point.
Yeah, it's actually Putin-proof because Putin sounds like a Frappuccino. And did you know Frapp is the sound effects for farts? So anytime you drink a Starbucks drink, and they say, oh, it's a Frappuccino, and then you think of the sound effects from a comic book, well, Frappuccinos are brown. And so is it actually fart water? You're drinking sweet flavored farts. No, it's a Pacino. Help me. Ew. Why does it taste so good but smell so bad?
This is either going to be our best episode ever, or people are going to unsubscribe.
Yeah, they'll all unsubscribe. You know, poor Les Garner. He did a podcast with me, and he was like, you are a cross between money, put in 888 gigawatts of power into something, and please, Eddie. He said I was a cross between Doc Brown and Roger Rabbit.
I could see that. Let me see. Especially the facial hair. The facial hair is definitely, for sure. A little back.
The Roger Rabbit side, right?
Yeah, kind of. But then you got the gray hair, so it kind of balances out, right? Yeah. So it's a true mix. So where can people find Silver Phoenix Entertainment and any of your current work?
Well, normally, when it wasn't hacked by people from Singapore, they could just go to my website, silverphoenix.net.
So specific.
But, yeah, but I'm it actually is. We discovered it. But I'm currently having my websites overhauled and rebuilt. L.L. Garner, who's this amazing artist. He's starting to reach the speed of Jack Kirby. My friend can do 4 pages a day in comic books, and it doesn't look like eight-year-old anime tripe, which is kind of fun.
Eight-year-old anime tripe.
Yeah, trite. You know, you're like, oh, look at me. I could do Sailor Moon, and everything's disjointed, and you're like, oh my God, child. You have my pity. But we'll try to teach you so you know how to draw and can get a real job instead of just cry every night when you go to bed.
All right, so new website incoming since Singapore hacked your old one.
Yes, mean Singapore.
What about
and they want all this
media?
Money, and we're like, no, you're not going to get money. You don't deserve it. So you guys smell like a halibut butt.
What about social media?
My name, you can go there, or Silver Phoenix on social media, or, you know, my individual comic book titles. I have several. And I'm actually working. Well, there's one that's kind of up now that's kind of cool. It's called HPLovecraftTarot.com. And that's a really cool project that I'm working on with L.L. Garner. Well, he came up with it, but I'm helping with some layout and stuff and helping with the minor arcana. But he's done all the grunt work and the brunt work and stuff like that. We should get him on your thing sometime. But, I have lots of projects. Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove, which is all spooky. Like, I'm scared. There's some ghosts in here. And then The Cockerel's Fist. Well, you're very quiet on that one.
Yeah, because I didn't know which direction you were about to go.
No. The Cockerel's Fist is this bar that these idiots own. Well, it's more like an inn, like a D&D style inn, except no one can fight in it. If you and I were like mortal enemies, like you were an anti-paladin flying in on a Pegasus, and I was a paladin flying in on a Kelpie or something, we could not fight in the bar. We can't come to physical blows. Something stops it from happening. There's some type of weird wish magic god spell. Not even gods can fight in it. But we could yell insults. And the way that you buy food is you got to tell a story that's real. And then you get to eat because they don't care about money. Because everybody keeps turning in treasures and stuff. And, just imagine this. Like even dragons are jealous of the Cockerel's Fist because they got more treasure than usually they do. But
obviously the social media on Silver Phoenix, but folks can of course find you on Tales of Bachelor's Grove or Haunting of Bachelor's Grove, right? And then they can find you on Cockerel's Fist.
I'm building all those sites. So right now I don't have any working websites at the moment, except for HPLovecraftTarot.com, which is really my friend's website, but I'm helping him out. That's for now.
So hit up that one, and then Silver Phoenix Entertainment, of course, that one's pretty easy to find. It literally is how it's spelled normally.
Yeah, I'm such an idiot.
So he came so prepared with all these websites that are broken.
Yes, I did. They're all like, I bought the names.
Well, I can say for the Game Deflators, our websites are not broken. You can find us on thegamedeflators.com. You can also
Website. Look at that. It's beautiful.
Isn't it so beautiful?
Yeah, I mean, you weren't hacked by people from Singapore.
Actually, I did have people from China try to hack it recently. See? Yeah. So funny enough, I mean, we have dual authentication or anything else set up.
Right.
But yeah, I got the notification. It's like, oh, somebody's trying to access your WordPress account, blah, blah. And I probably shouldn't have said where it's located. But
yeah. WordPress is horrible. I hate WordPress. It's disgusting.
It's not bad for it. I mean, I've got the dual authentication, like I said, crazy passwords, right. All this other stuff. So, I mean, if somebody hacks it, sniff the
butt of a famous leader from some overseas country, but if I say it, I will be hunted down and killed. So I won't.
Well, and you'll also cancel us in the process. So,
oh yes, no, we don't want to be canceled.
Yeah, so you can find us on our website. We're also on social media, at Game Deflators on X, at The Game Deflators on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. You can also find us on YouTube. Game Deflators podcast.
Yeah, you can have all these balloons around and all the balloons say game.
Deflators. Because yeah, they, I see the game and then they deflate. I got you.
Right.
I got you. Yeah. I'm right on point if you're there.
Oh boy.
YouTube as well. You can find us there. Just search up Game Deflators. We have some short videos, unboxings, all that good fun stuff on there whenever we get to do it, along with audio versions of the podcast. And of course, leave a 5-star review and leave us a comment. We like comments. Okay.
Now, could you imagine with the deflators, you have all these limp balloons everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden people like pay you for hot air balloon rides. And so you go to Chicago so that all the balloons can be filled up with all the political talk. And then all your balloons can fly because of all the hot air.
Such a tangent. I can't wait to go out to Chicago and see you again.
I know, that's so great. Wasn't it hysterical when we went to the Billy Goat?
You know, oh, that was
cheeseburger, fun. Cheeseburger, a Pepsi, no Coke.
Or yeah, the Billy Goat Tavern was fun. That was my first trip to Chicago. I definitely enjoyed that one.
Wasn't that a surreal experience?
That was cool. Yeah, that was a fun one. Okay, so as far as gaming pickups.
Yeah.
So I've got a copy of Bramble the Mountain King that'll be coming in on PlayStation 5.
Cool.
Actually, it'll probably actually be on hand already when this episode airs. But basically, it's like a horror type game in terms of horror setting, not necessarily like jump scares. And it has a lot of Norse mythology and stuff involved. It's about a 5-hour game in total on PS5. But it looks pretty cool. I've had my eye on it for a while. It's got like 4.8 out of 5 on Amazon in terms of review. I do try to take those reviews seriously when I go on there.
Okay.
And it definitely looks like a cool game that I want to play. It's short enough, given the toddler situation at the house.
Wait, you got a toddler?
Yeah, you know I have a toddler. You talked to him this
morning. Oh, no. I thought you were the toddler.
Oh, well,
yeah. Because you're playing all the games. Your wife is like, oh, God, I got 2 toddlers.
Well, yes, she does say that sometimes, but she plays video games too, so she can't talk.
Oh, no. So then you're like, who's the toddler now, Missy?
The house of games together stays together.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. Why do I think of the Art Crumb drawing right now?
I have no idea.
Never mind.
So beyond that, I'm also currently playing still. Well, actually, a couple games I'm now currently playing.
Still is cool.
The Bramble, you're looking at it?
Yeah. Still is great.
I think it looks pretty cool. The art looks really awesome too.
That's amazing.
So I am still playing Tales of Symphonia right now on the PlayStation 3. For those that have been following, the last I said or last location I was at was the Tower of Mana. And honestly, this may be out of date by the time this episode comes through, because I'll probably be talking about it on our episode 279. So future John.
279 is rather fine. When you open up a bottle of wine.
It's going to be like this for a while, folks. The whole episode. Yeah. So Tower of Mana is where I was at. Got through the Tower of Salvation, where Colette turns into an angel. Turns out that Kratos is actually part of the Desaians, as well as the Crucius. And pretty much betrays you. We end up in the Silverant base afterwards with the renegades who save us within that part of the game. And then I have now made my way to Tethiala, which is the like alternate world on the other side of the standard world in Tales of Symphonia. So making some pretty good progress there.
That's cool.
The game itself has had plenty of plot twists coming through. So definitely enjoying those plot twists, and the story is truly developing, which is kind of nice. So looking at standard chapters, I'm close to about halfway down with this game.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So what have been your main difficulty, and have you died a lot in the game? Like,
so I haven't really died a lot in the game. A couple things here with it. So I've been trying to increase any sort of like weapon damage that I can have. I'm trying to increase defensively any sort of armor I've got as well. Adding in certain types of attachments to ensure that like defense goes up or health continues to go up, and strategic with my tech abilities that they have in a game. Ooh. So any sort of like difficult battle I've come across.
Yeah.
What was that?
You have abilities.
I do have abilities. Right. So any sort of like tough battles that have come into play, I've been able to mitigate like most disaster and can heal and all that with the different items that I have. So I've gotten a little better strategy wise when I go into some of these bigger boss battles. I do feel I'm a little under leveled in the game, but yeah, you know how it goes with some of these games. Like you kind of push through. If you're too low of a level, you grind it out a little bit and then you're good to go after a while.
Now, when you're grinding, be careful not to bump.
I will definitely be careful not to bump when I'm grinding.
Because your wife will get all jealous of you.
Yeah. And so then the other game that my wife and I are actually playing together is The Liar Princess and the Blind Prince.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Have you seen that one before?
No, just the name.
Okay, so you'll kind of like the premise. It's very story heavy so far. Yeah. It's like it's written in like this black and white with like that tan kind of parchment color
sepia
on the back. Yeah, so yeah, the sepia, yeah, that type of style.
You listen and to the show and you get educated.
Yeah, with Charles, I'm terrible at these things. I would have said sepia, so I'm glad you pronounced it right the first time. So basically it's in that style, but it's like almost comic book style, actually, the way that it's all drawn out. And it's very much like rough line sketches of the different types of characters. And so, it kicks off like very heavy storytelling with this prince who's listening to his beautiful voice in the forest. And it turns out that the beautiful voice is actually a wolf. The wolf would normally eat, anybody coming through the forest, cause it's a man eating wolf. But because the boy claps and applauds and whatnot, the singing, the wolf continues to sing and grows fond of the boy. Well, the boy decides, I'm going to climb up and see who the singer is. And the wolf, scared that now being presented as a wolf, slashes at the boy's eyes, blinding him. So now you've got the blind prince. The wolf, feeling bad for the blind prince who is put in prison because he has shamed his family by being blind, his royal family. I know, right?
They're anti-disability.
Yeah, exactly. So good thing the ADA exists now. But yeah, and the whole game is told, it's all in voice in Japanese, but it's all text-based. So you can read it, of course.
Oh, wow.
And so the wolf tries to save the boy, realizes, hey, I'm still a wolf. And then says, oh, I'm actually a princess from a faraway land. And so then the wolf decides, I need to change what I look like, goes to a witch in the forest who changes the wolf to be able to transform from a princess to a wolf.
Damn.
And then with that ability, you're able to go through various puzzles and things within the game to get from like point A to point B. And right now our goal is to get the blind prince on his way to the witch's house so that way she can unblind him. So that's where things go that's where things are of this game right now. We just kind of got into about an hour and a half of it. I think it's pretty cool. I think the music is great. I think the artwork looks good. And gameplay wise, it's not bad either. So I'm excited to see how that progresses, moving forward.
So basically, this is a furry cosplay of fetish dream.
Potentially, yeah. I don't know.
It's like, wow, my hot babe's a wolf. Ooh, rah, rah, rah. And I'm blind.
Except the blind.
Boy. Hey, you're kind of hairy today on the belly, my dear. Oh, the better for furrying, my dear.
Furrying?
I don't know.
So side comments on here on my Twitter. I don't know what it is, but for whatever strange-ass reason, it keeps suggesting to me to follow different furries on Twitter on the Game Deflators. I'm like, I have never liked the furry post. I've never commented on a furry post. No, I don't mind furries, but like, it's just pushing furry content. And I'm like, I haven't looked up anything that's tied to furries.
You know why? You got a beard.
Maybe.
And so they hunt they hunt beardos. So,
that's what's going on. Appreciate it.
Yes. Well, I'm just like, wow.
Well, beyond gaming, let's get into our first discussion topic here, which is our favorite comic book of all time. And so I sent this to you initially. I was like, all right, if I say favorite comic book, Charles is going to say either one of his or he's going to go into a whole series. So we're going to keep this on the individual level. No.
For me, I got to pull up the issue. But
I can pop in mine.
Are graphic novels included?
Sure. Well, for the sake of a conversation, we'll include some graphic novels.
Okay, because it was really up. I was at a toss between two. One was, I forgot the number of the issue of the Micronauts, but you know when they, there's this one scene where the female Micronaut, and they had no women Micronauts when we were kids. So like, who's this girl? You know, why is there a girl here? You know, but you know, when they would claim to their gods, Dalian and Sepphoris, I'm like, wow. So then I would start using that in high school, like, oh, by Dalian and Sepphoris. So that was kind of fun. But the one that really attracted me to the area of comic books, God, I'm bouncing around because Starstruck was really neat. And okay, even though writing-wise, Moonshadow was one of my favorite one, a watercolor book, mm-hmm. Starstruck, I started drawing characters from that, and that comic got me into comic books, doing it professionally, because I used to go down the realm of science. Give an example. Right now, assuming you showered this morning, you have between 20 to 24 million microbes on the surface of your skin working to invade. An onslaught of 3 to 5 million will have succeeded invading you by this evening. Fortunately, we have 2×10^12 T cells and B cells working every day just to keep us alive, which is quite interesting. So I was, you know, going down the realm of science, and I drew a whole bunch of Starstruck images, like erotic Anne and the character who got her boob cut off and a whole bunch of other stuff. And they started out in, I believe, Heavy Metal magazine. And then they were collected as a graphic novel by Marvel. I believe. And my sketchbook was stolen. Now, I thought I just lost it. And then I started seeing my drawings in kids' lockers. And I'm asking, where'd you get this? Where'd you get it? They wouldn't tell me where, but they told me they bought it from this guy. So I realized some of my artwork is good enough to sell. And then I decided to shift my gears going from science to art. And that literally changed my career path in high school. When I was younger, I did have a talent for art, but I actually had it emotionally beaten out of me from a very bad teacher because, you know, when you're a child, you look at the sun briefly, you get an instant after image and you may mistake it for being blue. Well, if you're a second grader, you may see it as empirical evidence, that the sun is blue or observable evidence, because you see it, okay, it's blue, so the sun's blue. So when all these other people are saying the sun's yellow, well, guess what? They're wrong, because when I see it, it's blue. And I would always do my sun blue. Well, this one teacher decided to give the other students permission to destroy my artwork. And then they went through all the school and destroyed everything, so I refused to do art until high school. And what motivated me back into art was the movie Yellow Submarine. And then I started drawing again and things like that. And I took the, like I said, was a fan of Starstruck because it was so weird. And that motivated me to do imitation drawings, which is, you know, often a good way to start. But because of the theft of my artwork and it being sold, I'm now to this day doing comics. And which also got me into board games. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and then we're of course going to get into some of your favorite projects here in a little bit as well. But so I would think in terms of favorite comic books for me, I don't remember the exact issue. So I'll have to look that up at some point, maybe add some comments, but yeah, it's part of a Death of a Family series for Batman. For Batman Volume 2, Batman and Robin, that whole big thing that they had going on there,
right?
Where essentially Damian Wayne dies, right? And so after Damian Wayne dies, there's this one book, and I got to find the volume. It's in my collection. It's obviously my all-time favorite for this, and the main reason because the entire book has no text whatsoever.
Wow.
The whole thing is just pictures. And so it's one of those situations where you're looking at, you know, not, you know, the verbal aspects of what's happening, but more of the pictures in the comic book to kind of help tell the story and show the emotion of the different characters. So you don't have the big thought bubbles, you don't have the big screaming or anything along those lines. It's just straight photos of what's happening. And so it goes through Batman's like a day in the life of Batman fighting crime. And it's after Damian Wayne dies, of course. And so he looks to the right of the Batmobile, empty seat. He looks, you know, he's fighting crime. Robin's not there. He gets back to the house. Robin's not present. And so it's like every single place where Robin would typically have been with him, Robin is no longer there. And it ends with him crying at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And so it's, you just see like this crazy emotional side of Batman that you normally would not see. Mm. And it's all tied to the fact that his son has died.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That to me is definitely top of the list, I think.
I do have a favorite that just popped in my head. I mean, you know, that goes to way early. It was Hulk versus the Thing, and they were fighting on the Arch of St. Louis, or that's how I remembered it. And the fact that heroes could like appear in other comic books, I thought was the most amazing thing. You know, it's the typical mistake, it was early Infinity Stone stuff. There was a chalice. Okay, I'm sorry. There was a comic with the Thing, with the Hulk fighting Thor. And they were trying to collect parts to build an ultimate something that they had to. And it was a crossover between the Avengers and what was the other one? The Defenders. The Avengers and Defenders. And there's a scene where Thor and Hulk literally grip, you know, Roman knuckle type thing, grip each other. And then you see the sun going up and down, and you see their feet going deeper and deeper into the ground, and then, you know, back to their faces, just, you know, doing what they're doing. And basically the text was something similar like, well, you know, the Hulk, the more he gets angry, the stronger he gets exponentially. And we're like, whoa. But however, he's fighting a god, the God of Thunder. You know, whoa. And unlike a god, the Hulk is mortal, and mortals must sleep, or something to that amount. Then all of a sudden you see Hulk getting tired. He starts to transform, and quickly, Thor, let's go. And then Bruce Banner collapses in the arms, and he's holding Bruce Banner. He's like, had I not released him, I would have sheared his arms off in an instant. You are a strong fighter. You know, just this hyper honor. But if you really think about the early comics, they're basically soap opera and forms of wrestling, you know, for boys, you know, which is kind of what it is. But yeah, that's an early memory.
Yeah. Well, definitely worthwhile for a favorite, especially when it's an early memory, more specifically. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go into our questions here. We got three questions for you.
Oh boy.
Lined up. So the first one is, you know, for those that are listening, we've kind of dove into it a little bit already, but what is your experience in the world of gaming? So board games you've created, and then support that you've provided in the gaming world. So I know for a fact you've done some work with Galloping Ghost Arcade from a printing perspective.
Oh yeah.
So you know Doc out there.
He's Chicago. Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. I've heard so many good things.
I have yet to have him on here. I have to have him on.
Oh, you need to.
Yeah.
Wow. I could try to help facilitate that if you need that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got several, you and several other people that know him. So it's just a matter of getting with him at this point. But, you know, next time I'm in Chicago, we'll see if we can catch him out there.
Yeah.
If you want to provide us with a little more insight into your experience in the world of gaming.
Okay. Well, with Galloping Ghost, I used to own printing equipment, digital. And when he started out, before he started buying up every business within a 5-mile radius, I say this jokingly, but he owns about 6 or 7 businesses. I used to print his video game, I don't know what it's called, the transparent keys, you know, the key art which attracts you in the front. I'll just call it key art for now. And I was the you know, I printed it for years, and we've had a off and on working relationship, but it, instead of it being a work for me, Charles, or hey Doc, work for me, it's always been like this equal things, like we're both different business people, and there'd be a symbiotic synergy between us whenever we work together, which has just been fascinating. And we'd never asked each other, could I work for you, or vice versa? But it's like, hey, can you get this done? Oh, yeah, I'll see if I can. And a very smart move, Doc bought a printing company, a small one, and he informed me about it, and I just felt very happy for him. You know, so you know, people are like, "Oh, you lost the business." I'm like, "So, it wasn't about business. It was really about my friendship with him and what he's done for the historical impact and significance of video gaming, especially for the American continent." It's just awe-inspiring. You know, he has one of the largest arcades in the world, and it is an amazing experience. And you will see games that you may never see again in your lifetime if you go to Galloping Ghost Arcade. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think I've been there 3 times now. Every time I go out to Chicago, and it is one of the best experiences you could have. I mean, I've played on original cabs. There are games that you could only find in Japan. Like, just he's so loaded with stuff out there, and he's got cool things. Like, they have world records that have been set on some of his arcade cabinets. It's pretty awesome.
And he's figured out how to set it so no cheaters are allowed. Like that one guy who cheated with the beard,
Billy Mitchell.
And like, I'm so well dressed. And how do you? I mean, how embarrassing, you know?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff on that. So beyond Galloping Ghosts and the work that you've provided with Doc, board games. I mean, I know you've got a few that you're working on right now and a few that you have to send me to play test. Hint, hint.
Yes. The thing I've really have been so refreshing with the board games over the comic book world, and the comic book world is fun, but the one problem with the comic book world is a lot of people won't take risks. They won't try something new. I remember I had to insult sales, do an insult way of doing my sales when I was in New York, because somebody's like, "Oh, you're not Marvel and DC. Why should we bother with you?" And it was very annoying to deal with almost a pejorative attitude for being new or different or an outsider. Fortunately, things like Kickstarter has happened, which has kind of broken things up, and they're now the largest distributor of comics in the world. And there's a lot of stories I can tell you about the days of distribution and even some of the corruption that could happen where, hey, I'm a newsstand store, I get X amount of money. Oh, I tear off all these covers and send them back for money. But what's to say that you're not involved with a different business and all of a sudden magically you have more money, but you say, "Oh, it's all the comic books I've returned."
Yeah.
You know, but that's a completely different subject. But with the gaming people, there's almost this given exploration and curiosity. It's like, "Oh, you have a new game. Let me see what it is. I'm happy to try it out." And it, if your artwork is sophomoric, as long as there can be a communal experience or a very exciting solo experience and the mechanics are solid, the artwork is almost secondary. It is just amazing the difference in the gestalt mentality of gamers over comic book people. And I find it very refreshing because it's a lot similar to my normal mindset where you share, you just kind of have fun, you know. If you get a floppy comic, you sit down, you read it, it's by yourself. There's no interaction. Graphic novel, the same thing. It just takes a little longer. But if you get Game X, okay, you can play it by yourself. Or, hey, you want to come over, get some pizza. Hey, let's get 4 people over, get more pizza. And all of a sudden, it just becomes this fun social interaction. And it can be a great way to relax, get rid of stress. And I've just been really having fun coming up with mechanics, intermixing it with storylines as a form of entertainment and in some ways education. I love, really enjoy the game aspect.
Well, and then you tie in the fact that, like, even though artwork is a little bit secondary on the board game side of things, it's still a major component as far as like you direct that artwork in terms of like, if it's humorous type of artwork, it's going to engage. So I think Munchkin is a great example where have this like a fantastic game. It's just some cards. You sit down, you can create an entire, you know, night of that essentially, but it's the humor on all the cards that like truly kind of makes it stand out, right? So it's not the best artwork, but it's hilarious artwork, and that's what you're going for. You're going for the experience, like you said, the overall mechanics, and then of course the artwork is a secondary component, but it kind of amplifies what you're already doing,
right? Which is such a different world. And then you got, you know, more high-end art, you know, you got, of course, you got D&D, you got different role-playing games where you can basically do improv acting, which is kind of fun. You know, dealing with scenarios, problem solving, you know, so on and so forth. With my board games, one of them is called Outer Planet Panic, where everyone works together to stab each other in the back. It's a sci-fi setting, but it actually teaches commerce, and people have to interact at one point to start negotiating for their own advantage, which can get very interesting and very cutthroat. The most cutthroat I experienced was literally playtesting with two people in finance and three attorneys. And when the negotiation stage happened, it was berserk. And I actually made a alternate rule that the governor can open or shut a negotiation to speed things up, because it was like 15 minutes they would be arguing back and forth, pointing this out, it was hysterical. And one guy who said he does not like board games, he finds them boring, said this is one of the few board games I've played and I want to play it again, because he liked the confrontation.
Well, and that's one of the things with board games too. You have to have the replayability. So, you know,
right.
You know, I mean, you don't always have to have it. It could be a once in a while type of thing. But you think of games like Catan, right? Like Catan are very much a game that you could sit down, you could play 2, 3, 4 games in a night, put it down for a couple of weeks. Friends come over and they say, let's play Catan, because there's that enjoyable confrontation that's tied to it. There's obviously the resource mechanic. There's a lot that goes for it. And when we think about going back to the artwork, when we think about a game like Catan, there's artwork is minimal, very minimal artwork.
Yeah.
And it's not like the main component, right? I think that's a great perspective you provided initially on, you know, the artwork not being the main focus, and really focusing really on the creative aspects of the game itself and the complex pieces that kind of make it work.
What is also fascinating is figuring out rule sets so you can play solo, because with all the games that I've designed, I have a solo set. With Outer Planet Panic, if you play solo, I've included a 20-sided die, and that's a countdown die, and you have until you run out of turns to win the game. Otherwise, you have to roll a die to see if you're arrested and executed, or if you get away with it, to do it again another day.
Yeah,
which is kind of fun. Another game that we're pushing into the forefront is Auto Clash: Flesh versus AI.
And it's modern day now.
Yeah. It's the theme with that is in the 30s, AI was developed, automatic initiation. In the 40s, AI helped us win the war. In the 50s, AI caused society to fall. In the 60s, the fringes of humankind are working with rogue AI to prove we have a right to have a place in this world, even if it's just as pets. So you have these sentient cars that allow us to drive it. And the way the game is set up is that you roll a 6-sided die, you move around a board either one way or another, and you can either A, win by blowing everybody else up and being the sole survivor, or B, entering these races and eventually defeating Master Computer. And what I've noticed, and this is, you know, not being pejorative with the attitude, but just observance, is whenever it's us guys, we start blowing each other up right away. The moment somebody has their wife or girlfriend, all of a sudden we're kind of working together, maybe taking small pot shots at each other, but we tend to go the route of let's destroy Master Computer, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And I've set things up so that you build the board for greater things, earning money and so on. And you're also building out your car. So let's say, for an example, your car is fully built out. Mine isn't. You stop and succeed in shooting me up. And then it's my turn. Or let's say I've lost a turn, you know, for whatever reason. And it's your turn again. Normally you roll the dice, then you leave. Then you could fire upon an enemy if an enemy is there. Well, because now you have brakes, if you roll a two, you can apply your brakes, not move, then shoot me again and possibly blow me up, which is kind of fun. Or if I get out of there and I roll a six, I'm like, you know, bye-bye. And then I have a bigger engine, I could push it to seven. But let's say you roll a six also and you have electric engine, you could push and you could land in my spot and again fire on me. So you can either go faster or slower depending on the game. And I've never seen mechanics like that before. And
we'll have to play it whenever I go out there again. Chicago. I'll
send that one. I could probably send to you sooner.
Okay.
You know, we're still play testing it, but the auto clash is just, it's hysterical fun. And, you even have a card where you've decked your car out. You're the mean ass, you're blowing everything up. Then you get kid steals a car. And basically it's just this punk kid and your car gets stolen. You don't lose your life, but you're given a fresh sheet. And you got to rebuild your car again.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Another one is a full life insurance. Oh, you can also have up to three clones. So you got three lives.
Okay.
But gotcha. If you get full life insurance and your car is decked out, and let's say I blew you up or Master Computer blew you up, well, you plop down the full life insurance card and you reset. Everything is the way it was when you first blew up and you have all your points back. And then it's like, all right, Master Computer, it's time to just pound you in the skull.
Well, I'm definitely excited to look at that one. That'll be a lot of fun to jump into. So, yeah, if you get me a play test, that'd be great. I could play it here, and we'll do a full-blown review and all that other good stuff.
Okay. When we get a chance. What's fascinating is L.L. Garner did the artwork on that one. And, here's what's amazing about this guy. He survived a double stroke last year. Like, I paid him to do a comic, and then, boom, he hits a stroke. I'm like, great. You know, somebody else I threw money towards and had a stroke.
This happened, so it's with happened another more game. Than once,
right? You know, it's like, oh great, I'm out all this money, you know. But then I get a message, hey, I'm still drawing, and he's drawing from the hospital. I'm like, oh my god. Then about 6 weeks later, I'm joking with him and I'm like, hey, let's go to a convention. He does it. He gets rid of the cane. And he lost use of his left side. He's been pushing. He's now able to walk normally, and he's starting to do fine motor skill things with his left hand. Like, he's able to now hold a grape without crushing it, able to hold a cup of coffee as his strength. And it's just amazing, his grit, and his style is beautiful. When you see Auto Clash, it feels like it was made in the 70s. That's another thing. I tend to have a retro style with my artwork for my games.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
The third game, which I think you experienced, was the Ultimate Quest of the Cockerel's Fist. That's basically a dungeon crawl game where we all go in. No combat is allowed, but we can steal from each other. But the only combat is the monsters we encounter.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one that we got the beginnings for is Unsolved Atrocities, where you play a detective from a different branch of the legal system. And we try to work to bring unsolved cases to court. And we try to... win the trial.
Nice. So, you know, obviously you've created a number of games, you created a number of comic books. What is your favorite project out of everything that you've done in your career? So, and this expands beyond just board games and comics. It could be murals. I know you've done some mural work in Chicago as well.
Yeah.
So what has been your one favorite project?
Being paid with government funds to create a COVID comic book.
That I knew you were going to lean on that one. I knew you
were going to lean on that one. I mean, how berserk it was. And now one new thing I'm doing is learning how to write grants and working on developing educational comic books that I can give away for free. I'm talking with a company called Thrivent.com. And Thrivent teaches financial literacy. They also sell various financial products to help you for your future. They're a non-for-profit, which is amazing. And my personal goal is if I can help the young understand financing, what if they started making choices now when they're 17, 18, 19, so that when they become retirement age, they, you know, put their signature down, get that retirement started, and imagine if they were making between $60,000 to $100,000 a year for the rest of their lives just for existing. Imagine what they can do for economy, for their safety. This can happen in any community, you know, if they learn, you know, and so it's universal. I've discovered that there are grants to give away computers. Imagine if you taught classes teaching the young about stocks, bonds, annuities, different financial products, and they get a free computer on top of it, you know, a laptop so that they could learn and better their lives. If they want to, you know, I love that as a possibility of using taxpayer money to help to invest, to educate people in general, to develop habits and goals to make their lives better.
Yeah, I remember when you were initially, I mean, it was beyond, before COVID, actually, I know you were working on some government type projects or trying to get into some funding on that for, it was healthcare specifically that you were looking at.
Which I was successful with, you know.
Yeah.
We did.
I just always laugh at the way you approach and say, you know, using taxpayer dollars to fund my comic books. It was always, always makes me laugh when you bring it up like that.
Yeah, my favorite line is, I use government funds to create comic books. Thank you for paying your taxes. Mm-hmm. And people are like, huh? But okay, here's the thing that some people make a mistake with, because a lot of people are like, you know, very anti-tax, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the government, you know, they just waste the money. Well, here's another reality to really look at and how each of us can be almost seen as a superhero with paying taxes. I know it's a goofy way of looking at it. One, it shows that you're at a profit. Two, think of all the infrastructure, your streets, schools, legal system, you know,
comic books by Charles D. Moisant.
Yeah. That too. But there's so much positive infrastructure that's done through the taxpayer money or quote government funds. It's just amazing what you can do. And somebody can point out, oh, they wasted it on this or they wasted it on that or it's being abused by that. But the reality, general society is able to function very well with, you know, taxes as long as it's not abusive to the individual.
Yeah. I mean, that's the purpose, right?
That's my soapbox. So.
Yeah. Well, so let's get into our third question here, which is going to be, what do you have coming up on Kickstarter? Any other projects that we should be aware of that are launching?
Yes. Yes. HPLovecraftTarot.com. It's
the one website that's not broken.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is amazing. I'm working on the funnel part of it. But what's neat with it, and within the end of the week, it should be up. I mean, fully functional, is L.L. Garner has created a tarot card set based off of Lovecraft, creatures and monsters and characters. And I've been assisting with the Minor Arcana. We are bringing that to Kickstarter. We're also going to delve into a comic series, and I've been coming up with game mechanics that one could possibly use for transforming your COC character to a 5e character and back. Hmm. So now we might not launch that part with this campaign, but we might do a secondary campaign where you can use the tarot cards in conjunction with this. But there's also an art book where Les has collected 30 years worth of short stories, and he's intertwining it with each tarot card. So it's kind of fun. I mean, it's really more his project per se. I mean, it is his project where I'm acting more as the publisher, but it is just amazing the positive response we've gotten from it. The artwork is beautiful. I'll send you some pieces from that. After that, I'm probably going to launch one of my comic books, Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove, on that to, you know, raise some funds and get that moving. Then after that, do Auto Clash, Flesh versus AI. Then from there, depending on the scheduling, bring Outer Planet Panic to people, as well as more comic books. I'm working with Professor Doug Rice, who has an Emmy, like I mentioned, to resurrect his series Dynamo Joe. That's an amazing anime. It's the first American full-color anime or giant robot comic book when he used to work for First Comics. I mean, when you talk to him, you know, self-taught artist, wonderful style, hyper-adaptable style, has worked in comics. He's worked for DC, Marvel, Disney, Image. He's worked on Ninja Turtles. It's just an incredible record. So that we want to bring up. And he and I have developed a giant robot comic series, Thunderworld, with separate little undertitles with it. Uncle Destructo, Gemma the Great. One that I came with, Ragnarok Fire, 13. And then Zayugan, the big monster of the monsters who we got to work to keep the world from destruction. It's just, you know, hyper adrenaline, anime style sci-fi, but drawn with the American styling palette.
Yeah.
And Doug wrote it, you know, so I'm really excited about it. And there's others, you know, but this is where we're doing. And dice for the visually impaired. So I've developed dice. I'm making board game dice, giant board game dice. They're the size of golf balls.
Jeez.
And I'm building that too. So, but I'm underfunded at the moment. That's why, you know, but I'm building, you know, I'm just building up and recuperating. There's just a lot of things that happened that just, you know, throw a monkey wrench into it. But that's where we're at. I'm a full-fledged production company. I'm working on its own project. And once things start hitting, then it's building up faster. Mm-hmm. The last one is Kaiju Neka no Rari.
I'm assuming it involves kaijus.
Yeah, it's or translated Monster Cat Rari.
Okay.
And what's crazy is Maki Takarada, the daughter-in-law of Akira Takarada, designed the logo.
That's cool.
Now, you've heard of Akira Takarada?
Mm-hmm.
He's from the first Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
How nuts is that I have a direct connection to Godzilla with my logo?
So I mean, you mean Gojira, technically.
Yeah, Gojira, right.
Yeah, Gojira.
But it's basically a fun, almost tongue-in-cheek style of, you know, the giant cat who thinks of all of us as her kittens, so she's hyper-protective of, you know, mankind, you know, of humankind. And when the monsters work to destroy us, she goes berserk like a normal cat, and we've designed powers. Laser eyes and acid vomit and, you know, all this other good stuff. Razor claws where she could, slice buildings in half, you know, or sharpen on the Sears Tower and half of it, the building's gone. It's
definitely a lot of fun stuff to look forward to.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so for sure.
And there's even more, but I'll stop now.
We could go on for hours, I'm sure. In fact, we do when we're in person.
I know, but I don't want to waste the people's time, and you've got a busy life and a child.
Cute. Yeah, I'm off today, but I got to clean
mentally
house here.
Physically.
I think that's where we end the episode. So appreciate you coming on today.
Oh, it's been an honor.
Yeah, no, as always enjoy chatting with you, whether in person, phone, video like we're doing today.
Yeah.
So if you want to follow Charles and his zany antics, just go on Facebook. You can look up Charles D. Moisant. That's Moisant for the last name, look for the guy with crazy glasses and a crazy beard, and that's him. You can also find him on Silver Phoenix Entertainment. So social media locations will have him there. And of course, the project, can you remind us again the website of the Terra one?
Yeah. HPLovecraftTarot.com.
So check it out there. And then I'll look, of course, for those Kickstarters that'll be coming up in the near future for those different projects. Go on.
I should give you my Bitcoin link for my Bitcoin wallet. So if people just want to do $8, $5, $10, like imagine if all those people out there just threw a little bit and like a Soupy Sales when he said, put $1 in an envelope, kids. And all of a sudden he had $200,000 in the 60s. Like, wouldn't that be hysterical? Something happens, then all of a sudden it's easier to do all these projects.
It would be. We need to do a Bitcoin link for us too.
Oh yeah. Let's do that. Let's put up Bitcoin links for this one. Just for the wackiness of it.
Yeah. Bitcoin and PayPal links. We'll do all
of that. Yeah. That'd be a circle. Okay. Uh-oh.
Well, all of that said, he's covering his mouth on the podcast. All of that said, this has been episode 280 of the Game Inflators podcast. Yes. My name is John. I've been joined by Charles DeMoissant of Silver Phoenix Entertainment. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for the grace of having me on your show.